Dublin's Talking Sport.
Welcome to Dublin's Talking Sports podcast with me, Ken Doherty, and my good friend, Reggie Corrigan. Thanks for tuning in to catch up on the latest GAA, football, rugby, and all the crack. Enjoy the show, and don't forget, rate and review wherever you get your podcasts.
On the show this week, I caught up with Stephen O'Brien of the UK Packers to talk about the big game coming up in Tottenham Hotspur Stadium as the Giants take on the Green Bay Packers. I also spoke to Will Slattery about the URC as Munster were beaten by Connacht in a brilliant performance from Connacht. Declan Drake and Sean Lane discuss all things GAA, and Alan Cawley discusses the game in Hampden Park as Vera Powell's Ireland take on Scotland in that crucial qualifying game. So download now wherever you get your podcasts.
Morning, Reg. That sounds like a really packed show.
Oh, you have no idea. Yeah, there's a lot to squeeze in, but we'll get there. Don't worry about that. We will get there. It's been it's hectic. There's loads going on. You had a fairly hectic week yourself. I don't know where to start. Will we start with the snooker or will it slag you off?
Yeah, United? Well, I mean, the snooker on ITV last week was fantastic. Mark Allen lost in the final to Ryan Day, which was a big surprise. He'd beaten Judd Trump. And he'd beaten Mark Selby on the way. He was playing some beautiful snooker. And Ryan Day, he started being... he was world number six at one stage, but he was a 4-1 underdog in the final, and he wins a big tournament, the British Open, gets him into the Champion of Champions, the Players, the Grand Prix, and the Tour Championship. So it was worth quite a lot of money to him. A lovely lad, and great to see him back as well, you know.
Absolutely, and of course, the Hong Kong Masters is on as well this week, isn't that right?
The Hong Kong Masters, yeah. I mean, only the top six and two wildcards, Marco Fu and Neon Yee. She lost to Ronnie O'Sullivan, who's plays Neil Robertson in the semi-final today. And Mark Selby was beaten by Marco Fu. He's playing John Higgins in the other semi-final.
Okay. All right,
so. And record crowds out there, Reggie. I mean, this, it looks fantastic. The stage looks amazing. There's, I think there's over 3,000 people going to the games there, which is brilliant. You know, one of the best cities in the world, Hong Kong.
Yeah, well, of course, snooker is huge in Asia in general, so probably not surprising that they're getting such record crowds along to it as well.
Yeah.
Are they a very well-behaved crowd? Because they're very well-behaved in everything else and other aspects of their life. I just wondered, do they get excited and get, you know, a bit rowdy at any times, or just very polite?
Yeah, they do, and it's great. You know, they get really excited. They cheer, they shout, roar, and, you know, brilliant. They really love their snooker over there, and they've got, like, you know, some snooker clubs that have like, 60, 70, 80 tables in some of them over there.
Wow.
Absolutely incredible. Yeah,
wow.
Mad for it, you know.
Incredible.
Yeah, yeah. I got to, I don't know whether you saw it last week, I got to play Stephen Hendry in a little retake of the World Championship final. We only played six reds, but it was live on ITV because the first semi-final finished so quickly. Mark Allen won 6-1. The director says, will you go out and play six reds with Stephen Hendry, you know?
Yeah.
And it was live on ITV1, and I had a great laugh.
I watched it, actually. I saw the replay of it. I was a bit disappointed. You had it wrapped up and you missed an easy... What were you at? You missed it.
Yeah. No, it was just...
you weren't focused.
Just having a laugh. I get the opportunity to play him. And particularly on ITV1 on a Saturday afternoon.
I know.
The director came to us afterwards. He says... You know, there was 500,000 people watching you there. There was only 400,000 watching the semi-final.
Well, you looked very dapper, I have to say. Stephen, on the other hand, looked like he just gotten out of bed. He looked like they caught him on the hop a little bit with the jumper on him. But I know it was good.
He always looks like that. Don't worry about it, right?
Well, and you gave him a real hard time about, you know, the old nettles in the pocket. How does he take all that live on TV? He doesn't mind being slagged off?
He's well used to me. They say he's so miserable that even his dog goes for a walk on his own. Like, you know, but I don't know how true it is.
Oh, yeah. I can see.
Good old laugh. Looking forward to the football this weekend, though.
How could you be looking forward to the football after what happened last week? Seriously, have you not given up at this stage?
Only a minor blip. Only
a minor blip. 6-1. It should have been more, and then they handed you a couple of goals just to make you feel better.
6-1. It was 6-3.
6-3. They handed you a couple of
goals.
Listen to Roy Keane and what he said. Roy Keane knows, and you have to listen to him because he's United, so he knows. Haaland. What about Haaland?
You know, I think Kane, you know, when he calls it, he calls it right. He's brilliant on TV, and he's right about Haaland. That Haaland is an absolute beast. He scored 19 goals in 12 matches, Reggie. I think he could go and make, you know, score of 60 goals in the Premiership this season, the way he's going, you know.
I saw some, I don't even know who they were, some yoke that was on Talk Sport or one of the TV things, and they were talking, there was one guy talking about Haaland saying he was a donkey, he wouldn't fit in, all this kind of stuff, and what the other guy's going, he's going to win the Golden Boot, not a chance, he wouldn't win, you know, the wooden boot. So it's brilliant to see how he's destroying that. He is just a beast, he's absolutely, yeah. I suppose the service he's getting from the team around him makes it a little bit easier, but still, you got to be sticking to the back of the net.
Yeah, he was a man. He's almost unplayable, you know. Yeah. And I'd say Ronaldo, looking at it, would say, "Genie, this guy could break my record of goals."
It's time for NFL now, though, and I'm delighted to be joined, as always, on the line by a very excited Stephen O'Brien, who's over in London for the huge game that's going on this weekend as the New York Giants take on the Green Bay Packers in London. Morning, Stephen. How are you?
Morning, Reg. I can call myself an international correspondent now. It's
great. You sure are. I'd say the excitement levels are high in London. Two massive names coming to town for this. And I mean, it's not a case of putting on a kind of a Mickey Mouse act and trying to promote the game. These are the literally the giants of the sport, taking each other on and creating great interest, I'd imagine.
Yeah, it's a weird one, isn't it, Reg? I mean, this game here, right? So this is the first time that they've ever had a London game where two teams had a winning record, which is unbelievable. It just goes to show the kind of pants kind of games that have been on up till now. Now, there has been some entertaining stuff, you know, and there has been sort of widely supported teams that have kind of just been down on their luck again. They come over. I was starting to think it was kind of like a London curse. And of course, freaked out when the Packers were announced to come over. I was like, oh, God damn it. But yeah, look, the Giants are massively supported in the UK and in Ireland, in fact, because you know how easy it is to get to New York. So people end up being Giants or Jets fans. And then with the Packers haven't been over at all yet. So that it sort of reached fever pitch. So we set up the UK and Irish Packers about 10 years ago now, and we had two main goals. One of them was to see the game in London, which we thought would come first. And then second off, we thought, you know, let's bring people over to Lambeau Field. We've been to Lambeau Field about 8 or 9 times now,
right,
before the Packers have come over, and that's why it's that fever pitch. So I think from an American perspective, they're kind of looking at it and going, oh, you know, do they know? For instance, here's an example. I was on the Aer Lingus flight last night, and sure enough, two Americans sat down beside me. He was from Kenosha, Wisconsin, believe it or not. And he was amazed that I was wearing a Packers jacket, and he thought they brought their cheese heads from America, which is the funny foam hat to wear in your head. And they were saying to me, like, oh, it's going to be like, where's Wally? We're going to go around London with these cheese hats on, and people are going to be like, oh, they're crazy. What's going on? But I said to them, no. Like, you know,
everyone will be wearing them.
We had cheese heads for sale on the site. You know, it was the American perspective that it's a novelty. We don't really know what's going on, but they won't believe the amount of demand there is over here, because, Reg, tickets went on sale for £90 and they're on resale sites for £1,700.
Wow.
Which is crazy. So it just goes to show the markup. And those Americans themselves, they didn't even get their tickets firsthand. And they were like, oh, there must have been a glitch in the system because we couldn't get them. And I said to them, no, it's because they were so high in demand that they were completely sold out. And they hooked up with the New York Giants fan group, and we did a podcast during the week, and they're saying the same, that you know, it's just absolutely insane. The demand for tickets is like it's never been seen before, so it's really good to see. This will be the showcase game, I think, for the NFL that will really, you know, make them wake up and see, all right, if we start putting on some good games, then we're going to get these crazy crowds, you know.
Yeah, and Wembley is a great venue for it as well, of course. I was there recently, actually.
It's in Tottenham, though, Reg, and that's the thing. That's what people were complaining about.
Yeah.
You know, that Wembley would have been the...
Oh, it's not in Wembley?
Everyone. No, and that's, they should have put it in Wembley, but they had an agreement with Dan Levy for Tottenham to have so many games there. So that's why it's baffling people. Like,
oh, sorry, I thought it was in Wembley. I just presumed.
Yeah, no, everyone does, because it's such a massive game, and Wembley holds 100,000 people. Mm. Tottenham holds, I think, 60,000. And Lambeau Field holds 80,000, you know, so it was bonkers that they put it in this venue to begin with. But look, we all know the sort of the majesty of the field, where the soccer field retracts and the NFL field comes up from underneath. So they have that novelty factor, but that's what pushed demand so high as well, Reg. That it was just two little seats.
Okay, well, it'll be an interesting game. And obviously you're going to tell me the Packers are going to take it, but as you said, two form sides. So how is it looking for a result?
I'm not being biased here. Look, London games are weird. They usually come down to a field goal for some reason. To be honest with you, the Packers have struggled a little bit offensively. They haven't been putting up massive points. Also, where they are weakest, Reg, is on run defense. And lo and behold, they're coming up against Saquon Barkley, whose quads are about the size of my torso. This guy's huge. Mm. And he's in form again this season. So Daniel Jones, their quarterback, has been injured, but he's expected to play in this game. But I don't think we can fool ourselves into thinking that he's going to be throwing bombs here. They call him Danny Dimes. I don't think it's going to happen in this game. He's just going to basically hand the ball off to Saquon Barkley. He's going to run the ball down the Packers' throats. So if the Packers can't get a hold on that, I think we're in trouble. Because the Giants have been strangely informed and they've been carried by their run game. And that's where the Packers are actually weakest. But again, they call the London game something like a Super Bowl atmosphere because there's neutrals in the stadium. There's weird sort of cheers going around the place because not everybody's focused on their team. And that's what makes this, it's meant to be a home game for the Packers, and hopefully we'll give them that with the representation of Packers fans. But with the interviews, Reg, and they're all out doing signings before the game and stuff like that, so they're very distracted. So that's why it's very hard to call this game. It should be in the Packers' favour because the Packers have dynamite defence, leaving out that run side of things. They should be able to shut up the Giants, really, and stop them from scoring a whole lot, because they give away run plays but they don't get gouged. So it'll be, you know, hopefully the Giants will run out of time. Basically, the Packers should have this game, and they're 8-point favourites in the game, and okay, of course that's what I'm going to say, that they're going to win, but this might come down to the wire.
Okay, and what about, it's been an interesting start of the season, as we discussed last week. Last week's games, did they go to form, or how did things shake up? Any shocks for us?
Yeah, a couple of shocks. I mean, with Arake, it went to plan apart from one game. And again, it was the one that you wouldn't really expect. So, yeah, there's shocks all over the place. Even the Giants' form now, to say that they haven't really got a quarterback, but yet they're, you know, running the ball down people's throats as well. And of course, it's the absolute, I don't know, capitulation as well of the Denver Broncos spread. They played on Thursday Night Football, and it's been said that it's the worst game that's ever been played. There was interceptions. Russell Wilson couldn't get the ball going. And they paid him $240 million, Reg.
Wow.
And they got Nathaniel Hackett, who was the offensive coordinator for the Packers. And he was sort of seen as this, you know, dynamo. He was the next coming of Sean McVay. And, you know, he's going to put in this system. And that's what we saw in Green Bay. The stuff he did with Aaron Rodgers and Matt LaFleur, he completely reinvented the way the offense worked. So if he got Russell Wilson in Denver, we were thinking, oh, they're back now. Here comes the dynasty back again. But they absolutely fell apart, and they've been falling apart all season. And he's already on the hot seat.
Okay, it's time to turn our attention to rugby now. Delighted to be joined on the line by Will Slattery. Morning, Will. How are you?
Good, thanks, Reggie. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Very well indeed. Enjoyed a lot of rugby last night on the TV. We'll get to that in a moment. Just this morning, just seeing here again the final result in that game against New Zealand and the Australian women, 41-17. England won earlier as well, 84 points to 19, and France indeed beat South Africa as well. That World Cup well and truly underway there. A lot of the favourites, you know, making short change of their opposition. Probably Australia will feel a little bit disappointed. They started very well in that game against New Zealand. But no doubt about it, great interest in the Women's Rugby World Cup, and an event that'll be closely watched over the next while.
Yeah, it's a funny one from an Irish perspective, because we missed out on qualification so long ago that we've kind of turned the page and are looking ahead to a new cycle, where obviously for the majority of the other teams, the here and now is what's so important. And I think you just saw today, you know, across the results, kind of the class of the competition shine through. England are overwhelming favourites, I think. You know, putting up 84 points against Fiji is a statement of intent. As you mentioned there, Australia threatened to produce an upset, like to go 17 up against New Zealand. Looked like it was on the cards, but to come back and win so comprehensively just shows that they are probably one of the sides that could maybe potentially match England, although that'll still be difficult. And France, again, South Africa, you know, Lynn Cantwell, you know, the most capped Irish women's player is behind the scenes there doing a lot of good work. They started well against France, but again, we've seen the Six Nations. France are probably one of the few teams as well that can match England. I think everyone, whoever beats England, if they are beaten, will probably win the tournament, but they'll be hard beaten. And from what we've seen today, I think these three teams are probably three of the strongest sides, if not the strongest sides in the tournament.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll watch it closely over the next while anyway, because as I said, there is keen interest in that. Okay, as I said, I had the satisfaction to be able to sit down last night and watch the game without any interruptions. And what a game it was. What a game it was. It wasn't the greatest game, I'll be honest with you, in terms of spectacle. It was very stop-start. But what a result it was for Connacht, because I was shocked, I'll be honest with you, that Munster lost that game. I really expected a big bounce back from them. Connacht have been poor so far this season. Munster have been equally poor, but you know, they picked a really star-studded team last night, and I really thought they were going to put about 10 or 15 points on Connacht, but Connacht had other ideas.
Yeah, like, it's easy for me to say this now, but I actually really did think Connacht had a good chance of winning that game. Like, they had been very poor, but if you just look at who they were playing, they played the two finalists from last year in South Africa. They played Ulster, who were a semi-finalist and who were, you know, I think everyone's in agreement of a good team up on the up and up. Whereas Munster had played the Dragons, they played Zebre, and they played Cardiff. The only teams Dragons and Cardiff have beaten are Munster. Zebre haven't won any, and Munster still didn't even get the bonus point. So I thought, even though Connacht had 0 points and Munster had a victory, the form lines weren't really that different. It's a very tough result for Munster. They were beaten, I think, comprehensively in some ways. Like, I know that in the maybe first 50 minutes or so, they had, you know, opportunities, but Connacht were the only team that looked like winning it as the game wore on. And I know there's obviously, you know, a new coaching staff, there's a new framework and attack being put in, and that excuse only goes so far. Like, the basic errors and the performance levels of some senior players there is extremely concerning to me. The body language, you know, week on week making similar errors defensively and with the ball in hand, that the sloppy handling, the ill-discipline, it's just, I think, I said last week, I thought they're going to struggle to qualify for the Champions Cup. That just reinforced my opinion last night. I don't think they will qualify for the Champions Cup. The Lions, for instance, last night won their third away game of the season. They've beaten Edinburgh, Cardiff and the Ospreys away. They were the kind of South African cannon fodder of the four last year. They look far stronger. There's no easy kind of team you could pick off to get into that top eight. I think they're really going to struggle.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, it's the surprise to me has been the South African teams and the increase and improvement in quality that they've produced so far. And as you said, I think there's four of them in the top six, if I'm not mistaken, at the moment as it stands. But that being said, this is Munster we're talking about. You're talking about new systems, new coaching staff, none of that should matter when we saw what we saw last night. No coach could fix what we saw last night. I mean, there was high balls kicked in. Carberry at full back didn't handle any of them. Healy looked unsteady and unsure of himself in the 10 positions. Some of the passing, the centre combination didn't work for me at all. There was defensive errors on the wings, like in particular in that back line. And then, you know, up front they were getting milled in the scrum. I mean, what was going on there? Their line out, which is Munster's absolute powerhouse, didn't function at all. So, you know, you're talking about new systems and everything else, but there were basic errors that were going wrong for them last night.
Yeah, the only silver lining was Tyburn again, another Herculean performance. Brilliant, they would have beaten out the gate, I'd say, if he wasn't as effective over the ball. Yeah, you listed a few things there that are kind of glaring. Like, one thing for me that's very concerning as well is just the form of Joey Carberry, like a guy who was for so long like our kind of X-factor talent in the making, someone who could be Ireland's Damien McKenzie, that kind of like player, you know, with the ball in hand, you know, boated out half or at fullback wherever he was playing. But he just looks so devoid of confidence. You have to wonder if the kind of years on the sideline and those injuries have taken its toll, because he doesn't seem to be the same player. Like, he doesn't seem to have the same confidence under a high ball. But even when he's playing it out half, you know, he's no longer that kind of running threat that was so, you know, vital to his game. And, you know, you think that he came off the bench against the Dragons and against Zebre with about a half an hour to go in both games. He wasn't able to lead them to a single point in either of those games. I'm just, that would be one of the most concerning pieces to me. You mentioned Ben Healy last night. He had a very poor game. You know, he missed touch a couple of times, you know, with penalty kicks, and was just a bit off all night.
But Will, sorry to interrupt you, but on that point with Carberry and the 10, and this is a big question mark, do you think maybe powers that be and maybe other coaches are feeling that same way? Because In my mind, and I think in a lot of people's minds, Carberry was always touted as the second choice to Johnny Sexton. He was going to be the heir incumbent and all of those things. But he wasn't picked at 10 last night in a crucial game at a time when November is not too far away and he needs to be getting game time in that 10 position. Then you've got Healy, who is getting picked. So have they moved on and said maybe A, Frawley might be now the second choice, and B, is Carty getting looked at again, and then C, is Healy, you know, being looked at as a younger player who needs to work his way into that? Is Carberry being left behind?
Yeah, so I have three kind of points I want to make on that. So yeah. The first one is that Munster are in a position where Carberry, yes, is the out half and kind of the heir to Johnny Sexton, but they have two other good out halves there. So they're trying to think, what's the best way to deploy all these resources? Like, Mike Healy was injured last night. If he was fit, I suspect Carberry may have set it out half and they might have gone with Mike Healy. But in absence of Healy, they want to get as many of their best players on the pitch as they can. So I can see why they opted for Carberry at fullback in that regard. Ben Healy, so far this season, had been okay. He wasn't as poor as he was last night. So I can kind of see why they would go that. I don't know necessarily if they moved off him at fullback. I think it was always an option that he might go there when it was a needs most case. Another part is
but he's not going to get in the Irish squad at fullback as things stand at the moment.
He wouldn't be anywhere near. My second point was going to be, he should not be in the Irish squad. He is not playing well enough, I don't think, at the moment to justify a place in that squad. Now, he will be picked because he is the number two, quote-unquote, and Frawley is injured at the moment, even though he is kind of coming up hot in his heels. But on form, he shouldn't be in that squad. And I agree with you. Like, Munster's needs last night aren't the same as the RFU needs, you know, in terms of they want him playing at out half. And then, you know, in terms of Jack Carty, you mentioned him there. I don't think last night was an advertisement for Jack Carty. He threw an unbelievable pass at the start of the game, but he almost cost him the game. With kind of his Achilles heel is his inconsistency. He missed three kicks that were eminently kickable. One of them was just to the left of the post. He hit the post. He missed two other ones. That could have really cost Connacht on another day, and it has in the past. So, we're in this kind of situation where Johnny Sexton is kind of out ahead of everybody else. And between injuries and form, the contenders are actually going backwards rather than forwards. I think Joey Carberry will be very fortunate to be in an Ireland squad based on what I've seen so far.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you. Okay, a lot to be done. Graham Rowntree seems to be backing his players, and obviously he would do that, and you have to admire him for that, but he must be inside feeling that his players are letting him down a little bit at this point. And as I said, leave systems aside, leave everything else aside, just purely based on individual performances, not at the level you expect from Munster players.
100%. You have to expect more of your Graham Rowntree from your senior key guys. Like, there's obviously some youth in that squad, but there's also a lot of experience from there as well. And even someone who's new to the squad but is a very experienced player, Malachi Fekitoa, I think I touched on him last week. Like, he's been brutal. To call a spade a spade, he's been very, very poor. He is on a big salary. He was their marquee signing. Damien D'Allende was really, really good for the years he was there. Already Fekitoa looks like a bit of a bust. Like, he's probably been one of the worst players on the pitch, you know, all four weekends. Like, the amount of handling errors alone that he's made has been staggering. So Graham Rowntree's in a very tough position. Like, it's his first time as a head coach. Already this season reminds me of when Leo Cullen came in and Leinster were, you know, beating out the gate in Europe. But crucially, if you remember, they also topped the league that year. So Leinster's transition was a lot different to what this could look like. If Munster don't make Champions Cup, it'll be very hard to sell to the fans that they're going places. Like, they'll need to see some sort of green shoots at some stage.
Yeah.
You kind of play down, I suppose, the framework part of it there. But I think that is important. Like, this will be a very new way of playing for a lot of these players whose skill level is very, very low. They have the lowest skill level, I think, of the four provinces. So to get them up to a level to play that kind of game plan that, you know, Irish rugby is going, I think it'll take a good bit of time. And some of those players probably aren't even equipped for it. So this season might be a case of Graham Rowntree having to be very ruthless and saying, this guy, that guy and this guy are not cut out to play the way we want to play, and we're going to have to refresh the squad. But that's easier said than done, because there's a financial aspect to that too.
It's not getting any easier for them either. They've got the Bulls and they've got Leinster and they've got, I think it's an Ulster as well coming up. They've got a lot of tough games coming up in the next while. So,
they need to win Bulls and Ulster. Like, I'm just going to kind of pencil in the Leinster game and the Aviva as a defeat. You know, that might be presumptuous, but that's the way the form line is looking. They have to beat the Bulls and Ulster at home, or else they will be down, they'll be a good bit down the table. And, you know, then you have a break for November. You come back in, I think, for two games before Europe. They open Europe with Toulouse at home and Northampton away. If that doesn't go well, like, you're getting to Christmas time, Leinster are back in town again. Like, it doesn't get any easier. Like, the easy fixtures are kind of the ones they've already kind of gone through in a way, which is the worrying part. The games get tougher and more kind of thick and fast after this. So, yeah, I'd be very concerned from a Munster perspective.
Okay, well, we'll just have to see how it all unfolds over the next period of time, and hopefully they can get back on track. We didn't get a chance to touch on Ulster or Leinster too much, but Ulster do have a home game, so I'd expect their form has been good. They've been looking solid, and I kind of feel that they'll get the job done on that one, but it will be a tough one.
Yeah, Ulster, I expect them to bounce back this week. You know, the Ospreys are missing George North. They've rested Alan Wynne-Jones and a few of the key guys. Ulster are basically going with the same team that lost to Leinster last week. And they'll probably point to the late rally as kind of maybe more indicative of what they're about than the first 60 minutes. I expect them to win well. I think if it's a dry day, especially, you know, you saw the difference the rain had last week. It really stymied their attacking flow. I think they'll bounce back with a pretty big win tonight.
GA with Declan Drake in the company of the great Sean Lane of Ballantyre St. John's in the programme this morning. First of all, we'll say a very good morning to you, Sean.
Good morning, how are you doing?
Very well, thank you. Very well indeed. So what would be wrong with you in a fine October morning like that? Sean will be getting his thoughts on the Senior 1 and 2 Hurling Championship semi-finals later on in the section. But we're going to start with football. And last week saw the finalists in both the Go Ahead Dublin 1 and 2 Senior Football Championships become known. The Senior 1 final will be contested by defending champions Kilmacud Crokes and North City rivals Nafina after semi-final wins over Thomas Davis and Ballyboden St Enda's respectively. Current County Kingpins Crokes seeing off the Kiltipper Logman 12 points to 1-3. But Galway star Shane Walsh scoring 8 points in the absence of Paul Mannion, who was confirmed as being an absentee for the remainder of the year following ankle surgery last week. Well, after the game on the Parnell Park pitch, I spoke to the Crokes boss, Robbie Brennan, shortly after the conclusion of that semi-final victory. And he was very pleased with the manner of the victory, particularly after such a slow start.
Yeah, definitely. I think after the start, all right, given the goal away so easy, it was nice to respond in that measure. Similar to Cool, I think we responded when we did concede the goal that day, so that's pleasing from our side, yeah.
The 26 men that were listed on the Clare Fagael today had no Paul Mannion, of course, and the prognosis on him is not great now that you've qualified for the county final as well.
No, Paul, he had surgery last Thursday on it, and I think he's looking at probably 3 months, I think is what the medics seem to think is the rehab. So yeah, we wish him all the best, and he'll be training and he'll be pushing the lads on, and no different than he did last year when he was missing. You know, it's a shame, but it is what it is.
Shane Walsh has stepped up with no fewer than 8 points again today.
Right, I didn't know he got 8, right, okay. I must watch a bit closer. Yeah, he's brilliant. I mean, people say you can just replace Paul with Shane, but like, they're totally different footballers and how they go about things. Obviously brilliant, but different in their own makeup. So nice to have him and kicking 8 points, yeah.
What was the most pleasing aspect of the win from your own perspective today, Robbie?
I think it was a bit of control, as I say, after goal. 1-1 to no score down, and a bit of panic maybe would have kicked in, but it didn't. And lads kind of got a foothold back in the game, and we went after the kick out, and we seemed to win a bit of joy there. So that was probably the biggest thing for us.
The last time I spoke to you was in less than happy conditions in Croke Park after the All-Ireland defeat to Kilcoo last January. But look, you're back in the county final now again, which is where you wanted to be, and the challenge of Nafina that awaits. I'm sure you saw their victory over Ballyboden on Saturday. What did you make of them?
Yeah, I thought I was very impressed with them. I thought they were very good last night. As I say, you know, brilliant keeper. Defensively, they're really solid. Serious firepower, very strong midfield. Serious bench, so like, I don't see many weaknesses in them, to be fair. So I think we'll be to the pin of our collar to try and get something out of it. But look, that's the challenge we're faced, and we'll go after it for sure.
Final now in 2 weeks. As you say, you're going to be without Paul Mannion. Everybody else come through this afternoon okay, Rob?
I think so, yeah. I think there's a potential blood injury, one of the lads, but I think he's fine. So no, it looks to be everyone's coming out there okay, thankfully.
Yes, thanks indeed there to Robbie Brennan, and that county final against Nafina is one to savour. More about that in next week's programme. Well, the Senior 2 final will be between St Vincent's and Sylvester's, both of whom, as well as qualifying for decider, also secured their place at the top table of Dublin Club football for 2023. So well done to both of them. Vincent's, considering the week that they had last week, of course, losing the iconic Brian Mullins, and St Sylvester's, or Brian Talty, will be happy with that, amongst others as well. And that's a great final to look forward to as well. This week saw the All-Star nominations revealed for both ladies football and camogie, with Dublin in both codes receiving a pair of nods. For ladies football, the TG Carter Awards, Leah Caffrey of Nafina and Clonwira's Carla Rowe fly the flag for the Blues. While on the PWC camogie side, it's a tale of two Aislings, Aisling Mara Vincent and Aisling O'Neill, who plays for Castleknock. Well, before the news was revealed, I spoke to Aisling Mara after her player of the match performance in Vincent's county final win over Nafina. And Aisling, being Aisling, was more than determined just to put the focus back firmly on the team.
A great night for the club. Team comes first and foremost, you know, so the main thing we wanted was to get that over the line today. Two losses by close margins in the previous 2 years, so we just wanted to make sure we were bringing back the win, so delighted with that. Yeah, look, experience is huge, you know, big occasion tonight, fantastic to be in Parnell Park under lights on a Friday night. Definitely the experience of the last couple of finals we've played in stood to us tonight. You know, we kind of knew how to deal with that big occasion, perhaps a little bit better, but Nafina are a very strong team, they have a great panel of players, don't doubt tonight we'll stand to them and they'll come back stronger.
And of course it was an emotional evening with the sad passing of the late great Brian Mullins earlier on today. That was an extra motivationary factor for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, that was in our minds tonight. We wanted to go out and do him proud. You know, a man who always represented the club well and has worn the jersey and the Dublin jersey over many years, many great performances. So we wanted to go out and, you know, epitomise what he's about and what the club is about tonight.
Well, they certainly did that, no doubt about it. Congratulations to Aisling and her St. Vincent's colleagues on that victory last week, and also to her on her All-Star nomination. Great year for Dublin Camogie. And, well, the Camogie season is continuing, and Sean Lane, as I say, our regular hurling Camogie analyst, is with us in studio this morning, and it's a big day in your own parish as well of Ballinteer St. John, Sean, because they are doing quite well.
Yeah, we've a smashing young Camogie team at the moment, led by Carl O'Keefe. The game last week, which ended in a draw, Declan, and the scoreline would reflect the standard. It was Ballinteer 2-17, Coola 3-14. Sinead Wilde, Jennifer Dunn and Juliet O'Flynn for Coola were absolutely outstanding. But Ballinteer side, there was no shortage. The Grace and Louise O'Shea, Captain Amy Bourke and Ellie Ahern had outstanding games for them as well. So the replay is tomorrow, and it's 2 o'clock in Abbottstown. And to be fair, County Board, there's, you know, it's a replay and everybody is free in. So fantastic, and they're doing all the right things at Camogie Board at the moment, which is great.
Well, they say replays very rarely follow the pattern of the drawn games. We hope that's not the case tomorrow, because it sounded like an absolute belter last week.
It was, and it ebbed from one end to the other. It was a fantastic game. Ballinteer were ahead at half time, 3 or 4 points, but Coola pegged them back. But it was just one of those days. 30 girls and the subs that came on both sides, it just gave absolutely everything.
Just before we go into talking about the Senior 1 and 2 Hurling Championship semi-finals, which are this weekend, just a couple of points. We have to say congratulations to the great Ger O'Mara of O'Toole's, who played, I believe, his last game for the club in their recent relegation playoff victory. So glad to see O'Toole stay up in Senior Hurling for another season. But the great Ger O'Mara, what a servant to O'Toole's and indeed Dublin, and a man that you know fairly well, Sean, as well.
Yeah, Ger was an outstanding player. I would say his greatest game ever I saw him, he was playing cornerback in a 2005 Leinster final against Kilkenny. And as you know, I was working with Glanby at the time, and everybody for the next week were saying, who's that red-headed fella cornerback? He would have made any team in Ireland. He had a run with the Dublin footballers as well, but his contribution to O'Toole's, he's 37, I know that because from his under 21 days I've done my maths, he's given an outstanding 20 years or so to O'Toole's, and look, well, you know, have a really good retirement, Ger.
Yes, indeed, we echo that, indeed. Now, of course, they stayed up, but a team that didn't stay up was the Crave, Crave Kiron, who have been relegated this year, and on penalties as well, Sean. That's not the way to decide anything, really, is it?
No, Declan,
in Gaelic games.
You're 100% right. Crave won their first, it's 1971, to beat Vincent's. They won four more there, unfortunately, to beat Crumlin in 98, but to finish off on a note, and I mean, let's be clear, I mean, couldn't they play the game, you know, this weekend, next weekend, but to go out in O'Toole Park, and I saw the actual penalties on a video, it's an awful way to go out. Look, to be fair, you know, no more than Vincent's went out last year in the football, came straight back. Thomas Davis, you know, restructuring, ended up in the B Championship but came straight back. I've no doubt Crave will come back. They're a tremendous club.
Yes, indeed. And we wish everybody doing the great work there in the Crave club every success for the future. And please God, it won't be too long till they're back at the top table. I'm going to talk in a moment or two about another club who will definitely be aiming to get back to the top table. That's Foggs. playing at Castleknock in the Senior 2 Championship. But for the moment, Sean, I'm going to concentrate in the Senior 1 Championship. It's at the semi-final stage. This evening at Parnell Park at 7.30, it's Kilmacud Crokes, the defending champions, versus Ballyboden St Enda's. Boden beat Lucan impressively enough in the last eight. Crokes won all their group games, but haven't played now in 4 weeks. This is a tough one to call. How do you see it panning out?
Yeah, it is, Declan. And if you just take it, I mean, the question is always the six-mark question when it's asked. But Bowden in the last couple of weeks, that they've played Coola, played really well against Coola, but let it slip the last 15 minutes, which they weren't happy with, against Lucan. They've had another tremendous game under their belt. Meanwhile, on the other side, Crokes, look at the Usheen O'Rourkes, Ronan Hayes, Fergal Wheatleys, you know, Alex Constantine. They have been resting up for 4 weeks. They haven't had a competitive game. You're 100% right. They did everything right in the round robins. They qualified straight for semi-final. You know, the old match practice might just sway it for Ballyboden. I mean, Paul Ryan getting 1-8 the last day. You know, I know they got a fortuitous goal. Seanie McClellan, the Lucan goalie, won't forgive me for this, but he won't be happy himself. But Simon Lambert had a smashing game on Chris Crummy and Niall McMurrow. And I've said this before, Declan, he's still one of the best forwards in town here. And certainly, you know, Micheál O'Donoghue has to be giving him a shout.
Conal Keeney still doing the business for Bowden as well at whatever age he is.
Well, you know, when Conal decides football and hurling to give it up, I mean, I can go back a lot further than you, Declan. He's certainly
not that much further, Sean.
Well, he's certainly without a shadow of a doubt the greatest dual player I've ever seen in Dublin as a club player. And equally, on its own merits, you could argue that he's probably the greatest club hurler we've had in a long, long time. And he's right up there with one of the best forwards in football as well.
Indeed, absolutely. Now, that's at 7.30. Preceding that this evening is the clash of Whitehall Columbkills and Ballinteer St John's in the Senior 2 Championship. A cross Liffey battle here and a tremendous freshness. And of course, Sean, like the football with Vincent's and Sylvester's, the reward for the winners here is not only a place in the Senior 2 final, but also a place at the top table of Dublin Club Hurling next year. So absolutely massive game this evening.
It is, Declan, and it's huge. And, you know, going back a couple of years or the year before last, we had 16 in the A Championship. There's only 10 in it now. So, you know, the win to get back into the top 10 clubs in the county is huge. It's a huge weekend for my own club, Declan, between the Camogie and Hurling. Jim McGuire's done a smashing job. We've a very, very young side. Glenn Whelan, probably one of the strongest, along with the Gilligan brothers. But we've brought in some new talent. Dara Kennedy, Matthew Gardner, Seamus Fenton, Ian O'Hare, who featured on Paul O'Brien's Dublin under-20 team that went to the All-Ireland final. You know, Ballinteer have a right little chance here. But on the other side, you know, the experience of Owen O'Donnell, we've often talked about Owen. He's always talked an all-star, you know, corners when it comes to the all-stars. Dara Gray, Cormac Costa will feature. Lee Gannon, who threw his lot in with the footballers, will more likely feature as well. This is going to be a cracker of a game. And for two clubs, you know, as you said, the prize not only to get to a county final, Ballinteer won that senior final back in 2010, but you know, back in the top 10 teams, it's a huge prize today. And you know, it's great to see one of those clubs going to get back into the top tier.
5.15 this afternoon is the throw-in time. Ballinteer having to make the slightly longer journey to Parnell Park than Whitehall, but best of luck to both teams involved in that as well. And indeed to Crokes and Bowden at 7.30 this evening. That promises to be a cracker. Now, tomorrow afternoon, John, then the second semi-final takes place. It's a cross Liffey battle between Coola and last season's beaten finalists Nafina. Great to see the Nafina boys back in the county final again after their disappointment last year. Coola, we've spoken about them before. They're Coola. They're back. They're hungry. They're determined. The likes of David Tracy is showing great form for them again. Very difficult to pick a winner in this one.
Yeah, it certainly is. And like, if you talk about Coola, their first outing, and I was at it, you know, against Plunkett, you'd say, my God, these are on the slope. But Johnny Toomey has pulled them together. There's a return to form for Con O'Callaghan and Mark Schutte. But, like, you know, Johnny Toomey can call on Colm Cronin now, who's playing back to his best. David Tracy, as you meant, Jake Malone, Keane O'Callaghan, Sean Moran. I mean, if all of them, and there's more, play to their top potential, Coola win this game. But I can turn the coin upside down and talk about the Liam Rush. The Curry brothers are back, and if you watch the video of the Vincent's Nafina game the last day, the goal that Colm Curry got, won a ball high in the air, threw it dummy off the Hurley, went on his left side and stuck the ball in the net. The Curry brothers, AJ Murphy, Shane Barrett, Donald Bourke. I mean, it's great to have talent in that, and it's great for Micheál O'Donoghue, Declan. to go along and say, well, look, at here's two top class players, you know, two top class teams with top class players, and then throw in the Crokes Bowden game. I mean, he's, you know, a hell of a lot of good players to be available for him for the National League when it starts, but you know, these two games will be very, very tight, can go either way. Coole have been improving, Declan, and have been improving a hell of a lot. Nafina weren't performing all year, had a bad league campaign, had a very bad round robin, lost to the two games, Bowden and also to Coole, find themselves back in it, beat Vincent's. They're improving all the time. They've had lads away for the summer. They're back, the Curry brothers and all that. I think this is going to be a cracker, and let's see who comes out on top.
It's hard, not all the Nafina players. One man you haven't mentioned who might give an option to me, hold on, who was in the goalkeeping department, is Jonathan Tracy. We know Dublin's keepers are Alan Nolan and Sean Brennan. We've had the discussion about which should be the number one, and our opinions might be slightly different on that even at this stage, which is great, because that's what it's all about in sport. But Jonathan Tracy has had a fine game in the quarterfinal victory over St Vincent's as well.
Yeah, we're going to have the same problem if Jonathan Tracy does feature, because I was John O'Tracy's manager at under 16 on Dublin squads as well. So Alan Nolan won't like me saying this, but Alan is the same age as Gerald Mara, and we're both the day.
You're not suggesting, are you?
No, I'm not suggesting anything, but I'm just saying that Gerald Mara is packed in at club level. Alan Nolan is a smashing goalie, but John O'Tracy, you know, he's only whatever, he's the same age as Conor Callaghan. So he is a smashing keeper, and look, you know, it may be something that Micheál Donoghue will look at.
It may be. We have to give a nod to the other Division 2 or Senior 2 Championship semi-final taking place tomorrow afternoon at 2 o'clock. Foggs taking on Castleknock. Foggs, the record county championship holders in Dublin, had those 1999 since they've won it. They're an hour away from regaining their place at the top table, but Sean, they're going to find it very, very difficult against a fine Castleknock team, an emerging Castleknock team who, amongst others, have the great Kieran Kilkenny in their ranks.
Yeah, you know, Johnny Greville is in charge of this team and has done a smashing job. I think Foggs will get across the line. As you said, they've 31 senior championships, and actually they have an All-Ireland as well representing Dublin going way back. I just think they've been operating in Division 1, Declan, in the league, and have been performing, and I looked at their 4 or 5 wins in that. I just think that particular form will be enough for Castleknock. I saw Castleknock against their own Ballinteer, very, very nippy forwards, very, very, both wrists can score off left and right, but I just think Foggs will get across the line in this, and actually I fancy Foggs to go all the way, to be honest with you.
Oh, Carl O'Brien, I love you for that. Absolutely love you for that.
And he'll
help you right, of course, indeed, as well. But 4 great hurling matches to look forward to. There's another very important hurling match this afternoon out in Clontarf Road. It's League 2 relegation playoff between Crumlin and Scully Connell. So the best of luck to the Blues in that one. And indeed to Scully Connell as well. Hopefully we'll get a good game of hurling out there. Well, that's pretty much about it. We had hoped to speak about Owen O'Donnell's decision to stick with the Dublin Hurlers and that. But we'll come back to that in the next couple of weeks. Chris Crummy, amongst others, We understand, and Keane O'Callaghan talking about taking some time out from the Dublin panel for 2023. No doubt Micheál Donoghue and his selectors will be in Parnell Park over the course of the weekend, as indeed will Sean and I, keeping an eye on that action. And we'll have a full county final preview here on the programme in a couple of weeks' time. So I suppose the burning question finally, Sean, is will we have a repeat, do you think, of last year's county final?
Yeah, you know, and look, the straight answer, I'm not going to sit in the fence, and the straight answer to it would be that people would probably say Crokes probably slip across Bowden. I actually think Bowden will overturn Crokes today. Now, they won't like me down the road for that, but they're just missing a few from last year, and it'd take a little bit, you know. I think Bowden have been improving, and certainly, you know what Bowden got, Declan, was a nice little kick in the backside, you know, by letting Coole come from 5 or 6 points down to beat them. I fancy Bowden in that, and in the other one, can go either way, to be honest with you. I go with my old club Coole in that
one. There'll be a few points for you in the Fairhouse Road anyway, if you're right, that's for sure. Sean, thank you very much indeed for joining us on the programme this morning. The excellent analysis and insight into the Camogie and the Hurling Championship. The best of luck to all the teams over the course of the weekend.
Declan's going to stay with me for the football as well, but of course, joined as always by Alan Colley. Morning, Alan, how are you?
I'm good, Reggie. How are you? Hi, Declan.
I'm great. Never better. Looking forward to a good weekend of football, but really looking forward to Tuesday night, I have to say. We finally know it's going to be Scotland. Vera Paul's side are up against it. We know that. Scotland are a good team and she's got a few injuries, but this is it. It's, you know, a winner takes all, get the qualification. So a really exciting night on Tuesday in Hampden Park.
Yeah, hopefully a really historic night, as you say, Reggie, for women's Irish football and for Irish football in general, because if the girls were able to get the job done and qualify for a major tournament, I think it'd be phenomenal for the game in this country. We've obviously seen the Euros and the impact that can have on the women's game. So if we were to follow suit and qualify for the major tournament, I just think it would be fantastic. And they've done brilliant to get to this position, put themselves in a place now where, as you say, a shootout, one game, hopefully that'll be it, with the results going their way in the other couple of playoff games, and it will be absolutely magnificent. And I'm heading over as well, Reggie, so I'm looking forward to it.
Great. There's a few injuries to worry about though, isn't there?
A few, yeah. A couple of starters as well, and obviously there was the blow a couple of weeks back of Ruisha Littlejohn and Megan Connolly, and they've been the mainstay in that centre midfield area, and really strong physical players and very good technically as well. But to be fair to Vera, she obviously gave an opportunity to Lily Ag, who came in the last game, and she did really well, so I'm sure she'll slot back in. But then there was the blow during the week of Jessica Zhu as well on that right hand side midfield, who's been fantastic, and since she's gone over to West Ham she's gone on to another level, but unfortunately she picked up an injury last week as well, so they'll have to deal with those setbacks. But I still think it gives other girls an opportunity as well, and they'll still have a strong team out on the day, but it is a tough ask. Scotland are a good side in Hampden Park as well, away from home. But if you were to ask Vera at the start of the campaign that you'd have one game against Scotland in the shootout to try and qualify, I'm sure she would have taken it.
Yeah, it's a fantastic occasion for them coming up, all right. But what about the strength, Alan, of the squad and depth to be able to cope with the losses that they are suffering at the moment?
Yeah, that's the big question, I suppose, on the night, Declan, because as we've seen, when there's the strongest 11 out, they're very good, obviously, and they're a match for most teams. But I just think situations like this where there is a couple of injuries, as I mentioned, Lily Ag has come in and done really well. Situations like that, I just think it gives an opportunity for someone else to maybe step up and make a name for himself. And since Vera has come in, even domestically as well, she's got some home-based camps together. She's been constantly trying to strengthen the squad and strengthen the strength and depth as well amongst the girls. And I think she has a much better squad with a lot more depth than maybe what she had 18 months, 2 years ago. So despite the fact that there is three first-team players, if you like, starters who will be missing, I still think we should have a decent 11, a very good 11 on the pitch that will put it up to Scotland.
Yeah, you can all certainly remember sort of back to 1987 and the catalyst that qualifying for Euro 88 was for the men's game in this country, and you'd hope that something similar might be the future for the ladies' game.
Yeah, and I firmly believe that, Declan. I followed this team now closely over the last 2 or 3 years and watched all their games, and they have been gradually getting better game on game, campaign after campaign, and they're a really strong outfit. And obviously, as I said, I've been covering the Euros as well and seeing maybe some of the lesser teams in the group stages. I definitely think our team is as good, if not better, than some of those. They're probably not at the level yet of maybe the best 8 to 12 teams in the world or even in Europe. When we saw the European Championships, when it got down to that stage, I thought the standard was very good. But I definitely think maybe amongst the 16, 18 teams that were in that, I definitely think we'd be a match for any of those. So they've gradually got better. Vera's done a great job. The girls as well have a lot of belief in themselves as well. And I just think this is their moment. This is their time, Declan. You mentioned, obviously, for the men's team back all those years ago, the catalyst and how good it was for the game here and what it meant to the country as well. I definitely think this could be the similar moment for the girls.
Yeah, let's hope so. Okay, domestically there's loads happening. Great news for the south of the country, seeing Cork earning that promotional status again back up into the Premier League, and you know, a team we talked about for many years here on the show and the quality they produce, so it's good to see them back right up there where they belong.
Oh, it's great news, Reggie. It really is. You need a good Cork City, a strong Cork City in the Premier Division, and obviously with the facility they have in Turner's Cross as well is very, very good. But you do need a brilliant Cork City back in the league, even just for the geographical spread alone. But I think it means more than that to have Cork City, obviously a massive football in history as well, as Declan will know. And I think with Colin Healy at the helm now, a lot of young players at the club as well, hopefully it's a moment that they can kick on from as well and establish themselves back in the Premier Division and become a force again, because we all remember only in recent times the brilliant battles they had with the great Dundalk team only 3, 4, 5 years ago. And it'd be great to see them get back to that level. But for now, I just think it's important that they get them back. They're back in the Premier and established themselves. Something like what we've seen with Shelburne this year.
Yep.
That was the chat I had with you every week, Reggie, about Shelburne being back in the Premier Division. There shouldn't be setting any unrealistic targets. Just get yourself back established in the Premier Division and then build from there. And I think that's what we've seen with Shelburne this year. And I think hopefully with Cork coming back into the Premier Division, we'll see something similar.
Well, speaking of Shelburne, they have a huge one tomorrow against Shamrock Rovers. Rovers 2 points clear at the top. Won't want to slip up. But Shelburne, you know, they've been showing some good form. You never know.
They have been showing some really good form. I've seen them now twice in the last 3 weeks. And obviously with the semi-final fast approaching as well, Reggie. So they've a lot on their mind and they've a lot to play for. And they're a very determined group. Obviously, Damien's a very determined manager as well. And I think you go over to Shamrock Rovers, there'll be no let-up in thinking that, oh, the cup semi-final next week, we'll concentrate on that. He's a very demanding manager and he'll go over to Shamrock Rovers hoping to get a victory and put it up to them. And there's pressure on Shamrock Rovers now, obviously, because of Derry City's result last night.
Yeah.
Great result for them. It's back to 2 points. And I think if you look at the team that Stephen Bradley named on Thursday in Europe as well, it certainly had an eye on this game on Sunday, because there was no Jack Byrne, there was no Graham Burke. And I know I'd say he's looking at that and he knows the pressure is on with Derry and the focus has to be on the game tomorrow and getting 3 points again, because it'll be a really tough ask against Shelburne.
Yeah, they've got a tough few weeks ahead of them. I mean, they've got that one against Shelburne, they've drawn it maybe away the following week, but then they're looking at Pats and then they've got Derry City as well. So like right up to the end of October, there's some really, really tough games. They need to get results in all of them.
Yeah, and if the European game sandwiched in between as well, Reggie, which makes it even doubly difficult. And that was my point 3-4 weeks ago when I was basically thinking Derry still have a great chance. And that was the reason I was basing it on. If it was a clear run for Shamrock Rovers, you would fancy them strongly to get the job done. But because of the brilliant run that Derry are on, the tough game Shamrock Rovers have coming up, the travel implications as well of the European situation, I just think it's going to make things harder for them. And I think, as I said, that's why Stephen Bradley probably looked at that game Thursday night. Now, not to suggest he went out thinking, obviously, we don't want to perform well. Of course, he picked a team that he would have wanted to perform well, but he certainly would have had one eye on the game on Sunday against Shelburne, because he knows Derry are breathing down their neck.
Of course, of the three European games, I think left out, they've only won away from home as well. That's to Djurgårdens in that competition. But yeah, look, I mean, everything to play for. You look at the battle for Europe as well between Dundalk and St Patrick's Athletic. Adam O'Reilly's 93rd winner last night, reducing the gap. And at the other end of the table, Finn Harps and UCD scrapping it out for the playoff spot. So within the last month of the season, it's fantastic to see all the major prizes still very much up for grabs.
Absolutely, Declan, because if you can even remember back the conversation probably pre-Europe, and Shamrock Rovers were probably 10, 12 points clear and everybody thinking we won't even have a title race. And here we are now with a title race, with a European race and a relegation dogfight as well. So it's all to play for, as you say. And it's great. It's great for us tuning in. It makes it much better view and much better spectacle, which is what we want to see. The game is live, obviously, tomorrow on telly as well. The Cup semi-finals are live next weekend. You'll have another couple of live games after that with the league race as well. So an exciting month ahead, and I'm certainly looking forward to that.
Absolutely. Well, we're just out of time, Alan. But before I let you go, you don't have to go into any detail on me, and I know you're going to go with me on this. Arsenal or Liverpool?
Arsenal, Reggie.
Good man, Alan. You're back
next week. It'll be my team of the year. It'll be my team of the year so far. It'll be great.
Thanks for listening to Dublin Stock and Sport on Sunshine 106.8 from myself, Ken, and Reggie. Have a good weekend. Ha ha ha.